Hi, it's Sean D'Souza, and what you're listening to is a series called 22 Minutes with Sean. But what we're going to explore in this series is a whole bunch of questions that members at 5000 BC ask. We'll look at how these questions can be answered in a very short period of time so that you can move ahead. So here we go, 22 Minutes with Sean.
I'm Donna Brushy. I am a lactation consultant, which means I help mothers and babies with breastfeeding, and I also have a baby and maternity store. So how does one know a project is complete?
No project is ever complete. It's always what happens is that when you reach a project, you are at a different space than when you started, and you realize how much more there is to put in. And so what you start to do is you try and fix that project by putting in more stuff. But the only way you could know a project is complete is by the deadline. And that's the only way for me to know that something is already ready, something is going to work, is the deadline. There is no other way to know because there is no project that's ever complete.
Okay, so what do you do when time's up on a time-sensitive, but valuable project, and it's time to move on to the next one?
It's always time to move on to the next project, and you're asking, what do you do on a time-sensitive project in what way?
The problem that I face in the day-to-day life is that I have a project that I start and I run out of time and it's due, so I just leave it as it is and it's time to move on to the next thing, but it's got value to it and I'd like to put it into a more finished, complete state. So what do you do with that stuff that's, you know, has value to it but is not complete? It's just kind of unfinished.
So one of the things that I found consistently is that if I don't pre-sell it in some way, if I don't promise it in some way, if I don't take money from it or some kind of agreement, then I don't complete the project. Now, a lot of people see me as being very productive, but I have a list of no fewer than 20 projects. And one of the projects, it reminds me every day that I haven't done it. My new website, when I go there, it says July 2015. That's in the title tag, July 2015.
Okay.
So we're in 2017 now, almost 2 years later. The thing is that it was half done, and the rest of it would probably just take 30 days. But I've not promised anyone anything. So as long as I don't promise, I don't have to deliver, and so I can quite easily go to the other one, have some regret, and live with it. But when you look at this year, I've done a copywriting course in the South Island. We did the first 50 words course, which I structured from the ground up, because I didn't even look at the previous notes or the previous information. And when it comes to having to deliver and I've pre-sold something, then people show up and so then you have to do it. And that's the only way I can get anything done.
I see. So are there systems to capture ideas for future projects?
The system I use is very simple. It's to just mind map what I'm going to do. So say I want to write a book on, say, feedback. Now, what I will do is go to the cafe, sit down, work out what I have to do in terms of I'm creating an information product. Somebody could be creating some software. Somebody could be creating a course. But essentially what you have, the core of the system is, well, what's going into it? Then what's the delivery mechanism? And I would say that it might be a very good idea to map out how to destroy the project. So when you look at something like, say, the Segway, a lot of people look at it and go, well, That was a failure. But no one actually sat down there and said, how do we destroy this project? So they came up with all the plans. They came up with how to produce it, how to do all that stuff, how to get investors. But they didn't come up with how to destroy. What would destroy that project? And I think that is a very important part of it, because then you start to look at things that you would not have considered.
Mm-hmm. So one of those things might be you just don't have enough time or resources to complete a project, or
correct,
you might lose interest on it. Okay, so that's what I mean by destroying.
Well, in the case of the Segway, it was too expensive, right? So it was like, mm-hmm, it was $8,000 for a sophisticated bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't use it on the roads because they were too slow for the roads. They couldn't use it on the sidewalks because they were too fast for the sidewalks. So it was dead on arrival, but they didn't consider that. They just considered on the creation of the project. And I think that is a very important part of project management, where you look, I'm going to be a competitor. I'm going to destroy this project. What would I do?
Okay. So what are some benchmarks to know if a project is stale and just not worth completing?
It's very hard to say. I mean, in terms of technology, it's much easier, but it depends on what kind of project you're working on. The reason why you've stopped working on that project, if you're still working on the project, then if you find that you don't have any enthusiasm, then you have to question why you don't have that enthusiasm. Is it because you're just muddled, or is the project stale? Sometimes you get to the middle of a project and you realize that you didn't have that much enthusiasm. Now, we're talking about a big project, but sometimes I can start writing an article and I go, you know, I'm really not having any fun with this article. And I think the benchmark should be fun, because if you continue on just a stale project, then you have a factor of drudgery. But you say, "But what about the time that I've already put in this project?" And it's not wasted, because it then carries forward to a new project. The one thing that you have to be very careful about is abandoning many projects, because then you're teaching yourself how to fail successfully. So the way I look at it is, you create a couple of bad projects, that's fine, but then you have to sell something. You have to make sure somebody buys something from you, or someone comes to a workshop, or someone buys into your software, or whatever it is, so that you have that level of success. Because if you have that mix of success, if you have one success in every 10 hits or even 5 hits, it's fine, because that's approximately the benchmark of success. That for you to move ahead, you have to have maybe 1 out of 5, five tries, 1 hit. 10 tries, 1 hit. It's still good. That's approximately the benchmark. Most people think that everything has to succeed. It doesn't work that way.
So what is different between completing or creating a new product?
Completing a product is what I'd call a version of the product. So, for instance, the brain audit has gone through version 1, version 2, version 3. Completing a product is just completely the most frustrating thing you can ever do, because you've got legacy. You've got all of this information that has existed, and somehow you have to do a makeover. It's like a house, right? The house already exists, and then you have to do a makeover within those parameters. So it's much harder, because all of the stuff has to exist. You can't break it down. If I were to rewrite the brain audit, why would I write it? It would be to make it better. But how do I make it better without making it more complex? That is much harder than if I were to say, I'm going to write a completely different book. So the way I operate is to make a sub-project that is like a child of the project. And with the brain audit, I couldn't put in like 150 pages on top of what I already have. And I wanted to write something about testimonials. So I wrote 150 pages, I guess, 120 pages on testimonials alone. And sometimes if you want to improve the product, it's just better to create a child of that product, something that's a sub something of that product that exists by itself. Now, a new product is completely different. A new product tends to be kind of just something that you've never thought of before, or you know, software, workshop, training, consulting, anything that you've never thought of before. There is no parameter. And the way I deal, at least with the way I work on, say, a course, right now we're doing the first 50 words course, and the way I created a new product was not to look at what we did the previous time. So the previous time we had all the assignments, we had all the success that people met with in the last time. But instead of saying, okay, I'm going to create a version two of this product, I just said, I'm not even going to look at the previous one. And if you have software, that's harder. If you have information, you can do that. Just start without looking at the previous stuff, because you know enough to create a much better product the second time around.
Yeah, because you've changed from that first one.
Yes, you've changed. You've become more efficient. You've got more questions. You've run into more problems. It's completely different. So if you're creating a version of an earlier product, my new philosophy in the last 2 or 3 years has been to not look at the previous one. And sometimes clients will come back and go, you know, chapter 7 or, you know, week 7 was so much simpler the last time around. And so I get alumni, or I get some people to follow along, and what they'll do is they'll go, okay, all these, you know, 1 to 8 or 1 to 12 is fine, but 7 was better last time. Fine, we'll go back to last time, pull out 7, put it in. But by and large, when I'm creating versions, the first thing I will do is not look at the legacy product at all until after the course or after I finished everything, and then look at what's simpler or better in the previous version, or get somebody else to look at it. The second thing that I will do is just create a complete child of the product. So when you look at the brain audit, I just created uniqueness as a separate product itself, testimonial separate product itself. So I could take the brain audit apart in 7 different ways and create 7 different products, despite having the brain audit. And then a new product And the new product is a completely new product. Like, so for instance, if I wrote something about, you know, how to teach online, that's a brand new product. There are no benchmarks or parameters. The only benchmarks that I have is it has to go under 3 main topics, because I refuse to exceed 3 topics.
Why would you go deeper and revise a product rather than creating a newer child product?
For me, depth is very important. Width is very simple. To write just another book is, I wouldn't say simple, but it is relatively easier if you were to compare going deeper versus going wider. And the goal for me is to create efficiency, to create. So for instance, most people don't know this, but the first version of the article writing course was 9 months long. Now, if you look at someone, if you look at someone that is doing the article writing course right now, then they're achieving the same in 3 months. And when I say the same, I'm actually being very incorrect about it, because what they're achieving is far greater. Like, they're writing faster, they're writing better, they have more of an understanding of, you know, managing their energy. There are so many aspects to it that is far better than what they did back in, say, 2006. So why have a better software? Why have a better course? It is because it's your drive to create a more efficient, but not just efficient, but far superior product, far superior result for the client. It brings great, it's a matter of great pride when someone can do something that you can do, you the teacher, and the client can do it almost as good as you, if not better. To me, that's the goal, to make them write, draw, sing, dance, cook, whatever, better than me. Of course, they have to wake up pretty early for that, but still.
it. How does one, how do you find those efficiencies? How do you, what, when you're looking at your older stuff and deciding that you're going to make it more efficient, what, how do you know that it's better to change that thing than to keep it the way it is?
You don't know. It's just a drive to, I don't fix everything. I fix some things. Fixing mm-hmm. takes an enormous amount of time. To take the article writing course itself, last year, I rewrote the assignments, I rewrote the notes, and I redid the audio. And so it might not sound like a lot when I say I rewrote the assignment, but the assignment takes me 3 hours to write. And mm-hmm. if you take 12 assignments, that's 36 hours. And then the notes take, you know, a month or two. There, and this is all happening while the course is still live. The audio has to be recorded. It has to be mastered. There is a lot of stuff that has to be done. And I can't say that it's more efficient. I say it's a drive to create something better. So you really have to love it. If you're just, you know, I'm going to improve this. I make bread. I'm just going to improve this bread just for the heck of it. No, you must love bread. You must love coffee. You must love whatever you're doing. And when you love it, then you want to improve it. There is this guy, Jiro, in Japan. There is this documentary on Jiro Dreams of Sushi. He's been making sushi for 80 years. What could you do with sushi? Well, he thinks that he makes better sushi every day. There is another chef in Los Angeles. She makes bread. She has been working with bread for 30, 40 years. How could he make better bread? That's the goal. It's like the rage to master.
So even if you love your work, there are always some things that come up that make your work, you know, there's always something more interesting than your work. There can be things that are more interesting than your work. How do you deal with those distractions?
It's back to the same thing. It's the deadline. If you sell something, you have to deliver. And, you know, I try to get out of this. I will say, okay, we're going to sell this product, and then I will sell it. And then on the day itself, especially if it's like a product that has to be sent out by email or whatever, I will try to kind of get out of it. And just a couple of days before, someone will email me and say, I'm getting this on the 15th of April, right? And then you're... So it's a lot of stress. But what I do is then I stagger it. I realize that everyone can't consume everything at the same time. So I'll go, okay, on the 15th of April, you'll get episode number one. On the 17th of April or 19th of April, get episode number two. You can stagger it even if you don't meet the deadline. Because people say, well, what if I can't deliver everything? Well, don't, because people can't consume it all at once. Mm-hmm. And if you can, that's great. But if you can't, then you stagger it. If you're having, I mean, I've done whole workshops where I've gone back to the house or to the hotel room and found that the whole thing has changed from day one to day two, and I've had to rewrite the whole workshop. Well, day one was day one and day two is day two. And so the thing is that you're never going to be able to control everything. And the best way to go ahead with stuff is just to say, well, there is a deadline. I'm going to meet the deadline. If I don't meet the deadline, then here's how I'm going to meet the deadline in stages. But eventually, that's the only way you can get anything done.
Now, when you lay out a project with your mind map, do you ever go back and edit that, change it, make a new map?
Many times. In fact, that is what, if you want to know what's the secret, then that is the secret. Not that it's a, you know, hidden secret or anything, but people ignore this part. They're so enamored by the finished product that they don't see how many mind maps are created before that. they don't want to see. They don't want to know that there were drafts. I mean, you look at whether it's making movies or writing books, all the professionals go back over and over and over and over again because the idea is so raw in your head. It has to establish itself, and then it contradicts itself, and then someone else says something that pushes it either backward or forward. And so you've got to make drafts. In fact, I would say that you have to make many drafts, but like everything else, drafts have to have a deadline. And when you have that deadline, you go, okay, on this day I'm going to start writing, or this day I'm going to work on, you know, I'm going to deliver this workshop, or this day the software is going to go live. And at that point, it doesn't mean that you can't fix it. It just means that that's where it is at that point in time. I have done like the uniqueness workshop in California, then gone to DC, then gone to Guildford, which is in the UK. And every time the version has changed within the next workshop, which was just a week later and another week later. But yeah, so those are drafts. And is it still the best uniqueness workshop? No, it will never be, because I will learn stuff that will make it shorter and more efficient, but you have to have drafts. If you don't have drafts, you know, it's never going to get there. However, there also has to be that limit to the drafts. Now, when you ship it, you ship it, and then you go back later, maybe 6 months later, a year later, whatever, and then you polish that draft if you need to, or don't.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for all of these questions. It's a real pleasure to speak to you.
It is. Okay. Thanks so much, Sean.
Yep. And we'll see you in 5000 BC.
Okay. Yes.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.